Chicago winters can be brutal. Snow, ice, freezing temps. If you're thinking, driving in this weather, I need a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to take the next step. Need the power and durability of a Silverado, the all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer, the spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban, or the sporty, city-friendly Trax, perfect for navigating winter streets? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to handle winter like a pro. Don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate your nearest dealer, and start shopping online. Winter roads demand a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Hey, it's Kona. I'm coming to you today with some sad news. The body of Aubrey Dameron, the trans Indigenous woman missing from Grove, Oklahoma since March 9th, 2015, has been found. We covered her case back in 2023, and based on the evidence, it seems likely that foul play was involved. On February 5th, 2025, the Quapaw Nation Marshal Service sent out a media release stating that on January 31st, 2025, they responded to a call regarding the discovery of human remains located near South 565 Road and East 30 Road, north of Commerce in rural Ottawa County, Oklahoma. Forensic anthropologists and the Oklahoma Medical Examiner's Office were called and responded to the scene where they searched the area and collected the remains. The remains were taken to the ME's office for further examination and identification. They were not able to determine the amount of time the remains had been there, nor were they able to determine a cause or manner of death. However, on February 5th, 2025, the Oklahoma ME office confirmed the identity of the decedent to be Aubrey Dameron, an enrolled member of the Cherokee Nation. We're still going to have our regularly scheduled episode this week, but before we release that, I wanted to re-release our episode on Aubrey. Aubrey is a woman who faced a lot of challenges in her life, and even though she is now one of the thousands of missing or murdered Indigenous women in our country, she is so much more than a statistic. So hear about her from the people who knew her and loved her, and help her family get justice. We'll continue to keep you updated on this case as we get more information, but for now, I want to give you our story of Aubrey Dameron from 2023.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
Transgender people are over four times more likely to be the victim of a violent crime than their cisgender counterparts. The rates of murder, rape, and violent crime of Indigenous people are all higher than the national average. In fact, according to the CDC, Indigenous females experienced the second highest rate of homicide in 2020. Aubrey Dameron is a transgender woman of Cherokee descent. On March 9, 2019, she walked out of her mother's home in Grove, Oklahoma. Her phone stopped pinging 100 yards away, and she hasn't been seen since. Aubrey's disappearance highlights the struggles that trans people face in general, as well as the specific challenges she had within her own community and family. Was Aubrey's disappearance related to her lifestyle, as police claim, or was it someone close to her who made Aubrey disappear? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Aubrey Dameron. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone,
welcome back.
Thank you for joining us once again. Because I can't keep a schedule to save my life, but I swear we're going to get back like on our normal release dates soon. Last week, we brought you a story of a missing Indigenous toddler, Tika Lewis. Tika's mother is white and Chippewa, and her father is Black. This week, we're bringing you the story of another missing Indigenous woman, Aubrey Dameron. Aubrey is a citizen of Cherokee Nation. And, you know, we will be talking about her Native American culture in this episode, along with her transgender identity. So, you know, I just want to say up front that if I misstate anything, please accept my apology in advance. And always, you know, feel free to shoot me a message. Like, we've had really sweet listeners reach out and nicely make corrections about things like this in the past. And I do appreciate that because they were very sweet about it. Now, we've covered both of these topics in other episodes, but, you know, we're still human. So let's go ahead and get right into the story of Aubrey Dameron. Aubrey was born Austin Dillon Joel Dameron on October 22nd, 1993, in Oklahoma to her mother, Jennifer Bird. Aubrey's father, it sounds like, wasn't in the picture at all, and she grew up with one brother and a stepfather. However, it was her uncle, Christian Fencer, to whom she was the closest. The two were only 6 months apart, so their relationship was more like siblings than uncle and niece. Aubrey loved music of all kinds, especially rock and roll, but she grew up loving to perform, and she had grand dreams of becoming a singer or an actor. Those who knew her said she was a kind and caring person, yet often found herself the victim of bullying. Similarly, Christian was also bullied in school. He told Cherokee Phoenix reporter Stacy Boston in 2021, quote, "Growing up, we knew we were different," end quote. So apparently at some point, either in middle or high school, Christian and Aubrey confided in each other that they had a crush on a boy at school. They then decided to both come out as gay and no longer hide their sexualities.
What? At the same time?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you can see like why they were so close.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, this led not only to bullying in school, but also from within their community. Pam Smith, Aubrey's aunt and Christian's sister, described the bullying, saying, quote, "Her and Christian dealt with a lot of homophobic slurs, and Christian didn't tell me a lot of the details until after Aubrey went missing about them being chased home from school by people in a vehicle and, you know, them yelling slurs and stuff like that," end quote. Even she didn't know the extent of what was happening to them in school. And like she said, I mean, it wasn't until after Aubrey went missing that Christian kind of opened up a little bit more about all of this. And, you know, she, of course, was heartbroken to hear about what they had gone through as young people. Now, once the pair got to high school, Aubrey realized that she still wasn't her authentic self. So that's when she came out as transgender and began transitioning both medically and socially.
In high school,
mm-hmm.
That had to have been really tough.
Yeah, it sounds like it was. Of her transition, Christian said, quote, "It was something that was new to everyone within our community, but it was really new to our family. They didn't really know how to take it. I know they could have taken it a lot better, but they did what they knew how to do and just continued to push forward from there and found acceptance. It took a while. It wasn't overnight. It was something that they worked toward," end quote. Aubrey certainly identified as trans to the world, but that wasn't the entirety of her gender identity. Aubrey also identified as Two-Spirit, which is a long-held status in Native American culture. Christian described it this way, quote, "Prior to colonization inside of Indigenous communities, there were members of society who were seen as Two-Spirit. They were believed to be able to walk in both the male form and the female form, and they were held in high regard in society. They were held as sacred members because they could walk in both forms of men and women," end quote. And I find this concept fascinating. It's something I only learned about a few years ago, I think. Like, have you heard of this?
I have, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, like, especially when you get into the whole discourse of like trans people just started to exist, you know, with Obama or like whatever.
Yeah, right.
By the time she graduated high school, Aubrey had been through a lot and showed an incredible amount of courage and grace. She was a kind, sensitive soul who Christian said never wanted others to feel lonely or out of place because that's how she often felt. But the years of bullying, harassment, and feelings of isolation eventually took a toll on Aubrey, and she developed issues with both drugs and alcohol, which, you know, I cannot find that surprising in the least.
Oh, yeah. You know, for sure.
Growing up, you know, again, in a small town, not feeling very supported and going through all of this, like, yeah, I get why it would have become too much for her.
Yeah, for sure.
After graduating high school, Aubrey began dating a man named J.C. Pearson, who lived in New Mexico. Now, I do not know how they got together, how they met. Like, I couldn't find any context to this relationship with, like, some random guy in New Mexico. But possibly looking for a fresh start, she left her family and community and moved in with him.
In New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. While they were together, Aubrey also continued to progress with her medical transition and underwent breast augmentation. But neither life in New Mexico nor her relationship with Jay ended up working out for Aubrey, and by August of 2018, she moved back to Oklahoma into a house with her mother, stepfather, and brother in the small town of Grove. In addition to Christian, Aubrey was really close to her aunt, Pam Smith. She confided in Pam that she came home because she was afraid of Jay, saying that he threatened to kill her if she ever left him. But like many people in abusive relationships, Aubrey still felt a pull toward Jay and felt guilty for leaving. Pam said, quote, "She said, I just needed to get away. And then she started crying, saying that she felt like she should go back, like she owed him something. And she said he would tell her that she owed him for everything he did for her," end quote.
Which was what exactly?
She didn't say, but I'm wondering if perhaps he either helped pay or paid for her surgery while she was there.
Mm.
Because, again, you know, that's not an inexpensive procedure. And so holding that amount of like money over somebody's head is something that I could see, you know, even though it was a bad relationship, like you can see why she might have still been feeling guilt like she did owe him.
Right.
Not that she did. So from what it seems, Aubrey did stay in Oklahoma for the next year, though it didn't exactly seem like the perfect homecoming. Christian told the Cherokee Phoenix that in the months leading up to her disappearance, Aubrey started making less and less contact with her family. Basically, throughout their lives, Christian would hear from Aubrey almost daily. But after she came back to Oklahoma, that started to dwindle to the point where he would only hear from her like once every couple weeks.
But wasn't she living with Pam?
No, she was living with her mother. Pam is her aunt.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I believe Pam actually lived like 90 miles away. And so I'm not exactly sure where Christian was living at this time.
Oh.
If he was in Grove or if he was also kind of further away.
Gotcha.
All right, so this is how the story goes on March 9th, 2019. Witnesses spot Aubrey, who was by this point 25 years old, walking away from her home around 3:30. The area is incredibly rural, and there are no noticeable like locations within walking distance near the family home. So it's unlikely that she was trying to get somewhere on foot, especially because she had already messaged and was still messaging friends over Facebook asking for a ride. However, nobody had responded. That's just like, again, the you know, quick little description of when she was last seen. And when I first read that, I had a few thoughts.
Yeah. You said it's a rural area.
Yeah.
So who are these witnesses? Where are they?
Right. That was my first question. And then my second question was like, why was nobody responding to her on Facebook?
Mm.
Well, I found those answers, but they kind of only bring up more questions. Because as I initially assumed when I read that, Aubrey wasn't last seen walking out of her house at 3:30 p.m., she was last seen at 3:30 a.m.
Okay, so leads me to another question. How did these witnesses see her leaving
exactly.
the house in a rural area in the middle of the night?
Right. But it does actually give a satisfactory answer to the question of, like, why was nobody answering her on Facebook?
That's true.
I mean, so who saw her? Well, it turns out that it wasn't anyone outside, as you may assume by witnesses, you know, saw her leaving, whatever. The people who said that they saw Aubrey leave the house at 3:30 a.m. were her mother and her brother. Now, according to that 2021 Cherokee Times article, Aubrey's aunt Pam Smith said that Aubrey's mother, Jennifer Bird, reported that she was up going to the bathroom when Aubrey left the house that morning. She got a good enough look at her to see that Aubrey was wearing a black jacket, black shirt, black miniskirt, black stockings, and black leather boots with heels. Now, according to Pam, Aubrey's brother was apparently also awake, and he actually followed her out of the house and asked her where she was going, to which Aubrey replied that she was going to meet someone. However, Aubrey did not take her purse or her prescription medication with her.
Okay, so whoever this person was, it sounds like it's a short visit.
Right, that's what it seemed like, right? Now, about the prescription medication, though, I do want to mention that, like, we're not talking, you know, an anti-anxiety medication or something that it really wouldn't matter if she left behind. She has suffered from epilepsy her entire life and needed medication for that. So, like, it's something that you wouldn't really want to leave behind, even, I feel like, short term, but I mean, I don't know. Now, obviously, it's not known who Aubrey was planning on meeting, but it likely wouldn't have been anywhere super close if they were going out somewhere, but it was 3:30 in the morning, so like it wouldn't be a business or something like that. So it does seem odd that she would have left her purse and medication behind. But, you know, it's not completely out of the question if she was just planning on meeting up with somebody quickly, like you said, and returning home. Also, they're obviously not going to go out and get something to eat, so she probably, like, didn't need her purse.
It does make me wonder if this was, like, for drugs or something like that.
Right.
But, you know, you would think that she would need money, so why didn't she take her purse?
I mean, 3:30 a.m., it feels like it would be either drugs or sex, right?
Yeah.
Now, about 12 minutes after she was last seen, Aubrey's phone pinged.
So about 3:42?
Exactly. The location was approximately 100 yards away from her parents' home. Now, after that, her phone was either switched off or it died. So her phone was shut off or died very, very soon after she left the house. And I find it interesting, too, because, like, it's unlikely that she would have been walking anywhere. So she was going to meet somebody. It would make sense that they were coming to pick her up. But if they were coming to pick her up, then why would she have been messaging people asking for a ride?
Right.
But she was 100 yards away from the house. So it doesn't seem like somebody was picking her up necessarily, because why would they pick her up so far away?
Right.
It's all very confusing. Did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right. It's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. Hey everyone, it's Kona, host of And Then They Were Gone, and I am coming to you today to talk about True Diagnostic. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part? It's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent straight to your door. True Age is actually sending me a test, and I'm really excited to see what it's going to say about my health. And frankly, a little frightened. Because even though I'm afraid it's going to tell me that my biological age is higher than my normal age, it's definitely information that I can use. Because by tracking my biological age, I can actually see how changes that I make, whether exercise, diet, or sleep, can affect my health over time. And this isn't guesswork. The True Age test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working with Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I don't know. I like to know everything, so I think it's going to be really cool to know exactly how my lifestyle is impacting my body. I already know there's definitely room for improvement, and I think this is going to give me some actionable steps. So if you're ready to join me and find out your biological age, right now, my listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code ATTWG at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code ATTWG to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today. Despite the fact that she left in the middle of the night without her purse or medication, it would be 2 days before Aubrey's family, meaning her mom, you know, brother and stepfather, the ones who lived in the house, would report her missing to the Delaware County Sheriff's Office. So March 11th is when she was reported missing. And shockingly...
Well, let me guess. She left on her own accord, so we're not going to start searching for her.
Correct. Even though she left her purse and medication behind, they did not think this was suspicious. But this is what I find interesting, is like the timing of all this, right? So the very next day, March 12th, 42-year-old Danette Robotham, a friend that Aubrey had fallen out with, called Aubrey's ex-boyfriend, that guy, J.C. Pearson, and claimed that Aubrey was being held captive in Ketchum, Oklahoma.
What the hell?
I don't know, right? I'm sure that's what Jay was thinking, too. Like, because, I mean, from what I've seen, like, he was in New Mexico, right? He and Aubrey had broken up. I don't know if they were still in touch or not or what. But the day after Aubrey's reported missing, he gets this call from this, like, random woman who Aubrey had fallen out with. And she said that Aubrey was being held captive because of drug money that she owed the wrong kind of people. And so Danette then asked Jay for money so that she could help Aubrey. So she reportedly told him that if he would send some money, she would put in some of her own money and that they'd like basically pull it together and get Aubrey released.
My guess is Jay probably didn't give up money.
Yeah. Even though she also threatened him, saying that if they didn't get the money, they're going to, quote, take him for a ride, end quote.
Okay.
I don't know. So it sounds like, yes, Jay did not give her money and called police instead. They interviewed Danette, though I don't know exactly like when this happened, like when he called police, when they actually interviewed her. But Danette admitted that the information she provided was fraudulent and she was charged with extortion. Though, again, I just don't know the timing of this.
Yeah.
But like I said, we do know that the call, the initial call that she made was on March 12th, which was 3 days after Aubrey was last seen. And as I mentioned, only one day after it was reported to police. Again, police were not taking this case seriously. And so it wasn't plastered all over the news, you know, like.
So then how did Danette find out?
Exactly. Because at this point, Aubrey's closest relative and best friend, Christian, and Pam hadn't even heard about Aubrey's disappearance at all.
So it's not like the parents were like going through her friends list or whatever.
Right. It doesn't sound like
that
it.
She was missing.
Yeah. Because I mean, if that's what they were doing, which would make sense, you know, for them to do, especially because police weren't doing anything. I don't think that you would go to this like former friend, random woman.
Instead of going
instead
to
of Christian, like the person to whom she has been closest since she was a child. Pam told Dateline, quote, a friend of mine who's been my friend for over 30 years, she messages me and asked me if Shorty's missing. Shorty was their nickname for Aubrey. I was like, not that I'm aware of. Why? So she sent me a screenshot of one of Aubrey's friends, you know, that made a post on Facebook asking if anybody had seen Shorty, you know, to have her call this number, end quote. So that's how Pam found out that Aubrey was missing, from a friend of hers who saw a Facebook post that a friend of Aubrey's had made. Like, not from Aubrey's mother, not from Aubrey's stepfather, not from her brother. From, like, this random, you know, third party. And I assume then Christian found out from Pam. So Pam is like, what the fuck is happening? And calls the sheriff's office, who confirmed Aubrey's status as a missing person, and told Pam to contact Jennifer for more information.
What? So they're just not doing anything.
Yeah.
At all.
Right. So Pam calls Jennifer, who I'm not sure if that's her sister or her like sister-in-law. I don't know what the, you know, exactly what that connection is there. But regardless, She calls her, and this is when it sounds like she gets the story about, like, Jennifer got up to pee and saw Aubrey, and then Aubrey's brother followed her out and, you know, blah, blah, blah. She also mentions in an interview that she was, like, getting conflicting stories. So I'm guessing there were, like, multiple conversations. But regardless, this whole thing isn't sitting right with her, as you can imagine. So she calls the sheriff's office again on March 18th, a week after Aubrey was reported missing. The sheriff then told her that he was being briefed on the case. So basically doing nothing. He's like, yeah, I actually have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm being briefed on it. So let me get back to you. She called back the next day and specifically asked to speak with the deputy handling her niece's case. So then she gets handed over to Captain Gale Wells, who tells Pam that he doesn't believe that Aubrey is a missing person.
What does he believe she is then?
Just a lady who, you know, took off. So I'm just going to quote Pam directly here for this next part. Quote, I said, because she's transgender? And he was like, no, because of her lifestyle. So you're telling me because of her lifestyle that her life isn't worth searching for? And he says, no, that's not what I'm saying. I said, that's exactly what you're saying. End quote.
Yeah, I mean, what is...
Like, what's the other interpretation?
Yeah, what the fuck does that even mean? Like, her lifestyle led her to wander off?
Drugs.
I mean...
That's what he means. He means she's off getting high somewhere. She's not missing. She might not be fine, but...
But it's not worth my time.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
So luckily for Aubrey, Pam and Christian would not accept that non-answer, and they kept pushing. So on March 23rd, 2 weeks after she was last seen, the first search for Aubrey Dameron was performed. 2 weeks.
And at this point, is that when we got the phone ping?
I would imagine probably happened even later, honestly. Mm. According to Christian, they got about 36 people together to search the area, including a dive team who searched 2 nearby ponds. Now, okay, I did say that, like, Aubrey had lived in a rural area, but they weren't completely isolated. There were houses nearby, and those houses, some of them at least, had doorbell cameras. And again, I'm not sure if it was police or if it was, like, Christian and Pam. Probably Christian and Pam, but, you know, I don't know. But they went to the neighbors' houses and were like, hey, you know, can we see your doorbell footage from this date, blah, blah, blah. But that turned up nothing.
I'd be surprised if they even had footage from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, a lot of those companies, if you, like, pay, you know, for the storage or whatever, it keeps the video for 30 days.
Oh.
In the cloud. And then it gets deleted. Mm. But, you know, even though that was a dead end, it's not to say that the search turned up nothing, because something disturbing was found. About a half a mile from Aubrey's home, searchers uncovered a white sock with possible blood on it. Now, if you go back to the clothing that Aubrey was reportedly wearing the last time she was seen, this doesn't necessarily fit. But a lot of things don't fit about her disappearance. What I will say, too, is that in the past, when I've worn, like, knee-high boots, even if I have, like, stockings, usually when I don't, but sometimes I will put, like, socks over that just because it's more comfortable, you know, depending on the boot. So it's not completely, like, out of the question that was her sock. But again, that is not the clothing that she was said to have been wearing. Now, the sock was sent off for testing, but DNA results were inconclusive. And I don't know if that means that because it wasn't actually blood, or if it was blood, but they couldn't get DNA off of it.
Couldn't get a good sample.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know where this was in relation to the last phone ping also. I know you said a half a mile, but
yeah,
is it, you know,
like, in which direction?
Yeah,
or
is,
like,
it linear to where the phone last pinged, or what?
So despite the possible bloody sock, or perhaps because of the inconclusive results of this sock, police's theory of the case after this search is that Aubrey left of her own accord and that no foul play was involved.
Okay, but she just doesn't have her epilepsy medicine, so
Yeah, or her purse and never, you know, came back for it. So, of course, you know, police are saying this, but Pam and Christian's suspicions are only growing. Now, Pam doesn't name anybody specifically, but she did tell the Cherokee Phoenix that there were family members who should have been searching for Aubrey who did not attend these searches.
Mom and brother?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I don't know that for certain, but that's what I take this to mean. Around this time, the Missing Aubrey Dameron from Grove, Oklahoma Facebook page was formed, but it isn't run by Aubrey's mom. It's run by Christian and Pam. Now, unfortunately, not much happens with the case over the next few months, but on Memorial Day weekend, there's a startling new tip. According to Pam, quote, one of Aubrey's friends from there in Grove came forward to help. The girl said, if you look from her house up on one of the hills there in town, there's a flagpole up there, she says. And if you stand off of my yard by the road and look up there, she goes, they say Aubrey is buried up there, end quote.
Who's saying that?
A friend of Aubrey's from Grove. By this point, we're talking like 2 months later, right? Obviously, it is known that Aubrey's missing, and it's a small town, and people are starting to talk. What we don't know at this point is how much of this is gossip, how much of this is actual information, you know, what any of it is, but this is a topic of conversation now. And so this friend of Aubrey's believes that she has a legitimate tip. I don't know if she bothered to call the sheriff's office or just went straight to Pam, but either way, she got in touch with Pam and told her about all this because people were talking about, oh, yeah, Aubrey's buried up there. Now, this hill is about 30 miles from Aubrey's home. Another search team was gathered up, this one with dogs, and they went up that hill that the tipster mentioned, but the dogs didn't hit on anything. The next day, though, they went up on the hill next to it, and this time the dogs found something. The dogs alerted on a disturbance in the soil, which everything I've read says appeared to be a shallow grave.
Okay.
Next to it was a black leather jacket, similar to what Aubrey was reportedly wearing last. Now, this part is like crazy. According to Pam, Captain Wells told her that because it was Memorial Day weekend, the forensic anthropologist wasn't around to dig into this possible grave to see what was there. And Pam is like, they take holidays off? Like, what are you talking about? Isn't there somebody on call? Apparently not. So I don't think that anybody got there, forensic anthropologist-wise, until Tuesday.
Okay.
And I will say Captain Wells, like, later, years later, denied this, saying that it wasn't the holiday weekend, but that there were, like, two other homicides and they were busy or whatever. But, I mean, either way, nobody got there immediately.
I mean, like, they didn't even tape it off or anything? Nobody, like, went to look at this supposed shallow grave and, like...
I don't know.
What the hell?
I know. I don't know. So this whole search, though, that started based on this tip Memorial Day weekend, it turned into a week-long search, partially because they were waiting for the forensic anthropologist, I assume. They had canine units from Louisiana, Texas, and Arkansas. In addition to the jacket, a bone was uncovered. I'm unclear as to whether or not this was something that the forensic anthropologist eventually uncovered or if it was near the spot that looked like a grave. But either way, according to Aubrey's family, Captain Wells told them that it was an animal bone. But I don't know where he got that information, right?
Right.
If he was just like, oh, yeah, no, I'm sure that's a deer bone, or if like it was actually tested. Now, a basketball jersey was also found nearby, but of course, that wasn't remotely close to anything that Aubrey was seen wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the jacket seems to be a huge clue, Pam and Christian told the Dateline Missing in America podcast that they never really got real answers about it. The jacket was apparently tested for DNA, but the results were once again inconclusive. But in Pam's mind, that doesn't really mean much. She told Andrea Canning, quote, my thought is our own family didn't even contact us and let us know that she was missing. So how can you trust them to give actual DNA of Aubrey's? They could have given them anybody's DNA, end quote.
Yeah, that's all very true. Did they find anything in this shallow grave, though?
It doesn't sound like it.
Like, what the hell?
I know. It's so weird. But yeah, it doesn't sound like they... found anything, but they found the jacket, a basketball jersey, a bone that is probably an animal's, but I'm not even 100% sure on that. Like, it's all very confusing and upsetting. And again, you know, with the way that this case has been handled,
it just doesn't seem like they care at all.
No. And to Pam's point with the DNA, like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, how sure is law enforcement that that's Aubrey's DNA that they're testing against?
Yeah.
Like, I really don't know. On one hand, like, maybe Pam's like getting a little into conspiracy theories, but on the other hand, like, yeah, maybe she's right.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if Aubrey's family isn't being forthcoming with information, that's going to lead you to suspect them.
Right. And I should say, you know, that in the Missing in America podcast, Andrea Canning asked Pam directly if she thought that Jennifer knew more than what she was saying. And she was like, oh, yeah, absolutely, I do. So after this search, Pam and Christian's communication with the sheriff's office almost completely ceased. They're like, you guys are not doing any good for this. But they, of course, didn't give up. They continued to hold vigils and gather tips, but there really wasn't much movement on the case for the next year or so. But then in 2020, they got some unexpected help from the U.S. Supreme Court. McGirt versus Oklahoma is an absolutely wild case that basically gave most of Oklahoma back to the natives and drastically changed the way criminal cases were investigated and prosecuted. We won't get into the whole nitty-gritty of it here. And a 2022 Supreme Court decision subsequently reversed a lot of it. But what the 2020 decision meant for Aubrey's case is this. Her case was officially out of the Delaware County Sheriff's Office's hands. It was now in the hands of tribal police and the FBI. I don't really want to get into the whole thing, but the whole decision, it basically really limited the way that the state could investigate crimes related to Native Americans and pretty much put it all back in the hands of the tribal police and federal authorities, in this case, the FBI. So this was great for Aubrey's case because the FBI opened their own investigation and immediately reclassified it as a homicide.
I mean, good.
Yeah. Now, Director of Cherokee Nation Marshal Service, Shannon Buell, was critical of Captain Wells and his investigations, unsurprisingly.
Or a lack of investigation.
Right. So Shannon basically said that this case could have been solved quickly had the sheriff's office given a damn. And of course, that's not a quote. That is my interpretation of what he said. He was very, you know, much more professional than I am. Yes. But, you know, they didn't. And so basically, his agency had to go and start from the beginning while accounting for years of lost time at this point. And he said, you know, we're trying to put these puzzle pieces together, and some of these pieces might not exist anymore.
Right.
Captain Wells was retired by this point, but obviously did not care for this characterization of his investigation. He told Oxygen.com, quote, "This was the last case I ever reviewed. I kept it in my office within reach. What made this case unique was her lifestyle. Not only was she transgender and very sexually active, but she was also a known drug abuser. We made over 100 follow-up contacts in that case and never, ever found anyone or anything that actually pointed us towards the location of Aubrey Dameron," end quote.
The fucking lifestyle comment again.
Mm-hmm.
She's involved with drugs and sex. So,
yeah.
Like, fuck her. She's on her own.
Yeah. What? I love the last line of that. We never, ever found anyone or anything that actually pointed us towards the location of Aubrey Dameron. And yet, in a volunteer-led search in November of 2019 that, again, used canines, search dogs alerted on a shed on Aubrey's family's property. Inside was a tarp folded up in a kiddie pool. When they unfolded the tarp, the dogs alerted on it again, and searchers saw what appeared to be dried blood. And I believe these were not just like search and rescue dogs, these were cadaver dogs. And I did read one source that said that, you know, they were alerting to the smell of decomposition.
What happened to that? Come on!
Well, so they called law enforcement because law enforcement, you know, wasn't involved.
Wasn't there. Oh, my God.
So they called them. We're like, yo, we found this tarp. The dog's alerted. Seems like a big deal. And according to Christian, they did come and pick it up, but it took them over a month to send it and get it tested.
What the hell?
Yeah. And I do not know what the results of any of the testing were. And this is backed up by Marshall Buell, who says that the tarp was not tested in a timely fashion.
Unbelievable.
And of course, this is November of 2019 when it was found. So it was before he took the case
took over. Right.
So Buell also says that there could be more evidence related to Aubrey's disappearance on that property, which would make sense.
Yeah, but now it's years later, so I'm sure the evidence is lost.
Well, even if it isn't, the family isn't giving him consent to search. They're not letting him on the property or other law enforcement at all at this point anymore. And so now he has to convince a tribal judge to give him a warrant, which is not proving to be a quick or easy process.
Mm.
I mentioned how McGirt versus Oklahoma, like, again, a lot of it was overturned in a 2022 decision. I don't know how that's affecting the jurisdiction of this case now. I don't know if it's still solely with the FBI and the Cherokee Marshal Service, or if it's been kicked back to the locals.
Well, if it's kicked back to the locals, then nothing's going to get done.
Yeah, it's upsetting, right? And so I don't know exactly how that all works, because a lot of this that I'm seeing was in 2022. Buell also says that as of 2022, when this article was published, he has interviewed several of Aubrey's family members, but there were some he had yet to interview on purpose, he said, which I found interesting. He believes that the person who likely killed Aubrey was someone close to her, but he also isn't ruling out her ex-boyfriend or hate groups.
Uh-huh.
As for the family who Aubrey lived with at the time of her disappearance, they've remained fairly silent. Though her mother, Jennifer, did speak to News Nation in 2021 and told them that she believed her daughter was dead. Quote, I felt my child pass a year ago. A mother and child has a bond, and I felt it. I hit the floor. End quote. I don't know. I find this so difficult because there are so many cases that we've covered where mothers especially are vilified for the way they react when their child goes missing, or the way they don't react when their child goes missing. And their behavior is dissected and guilt is ascribed. And like, I want to be very careful not to do that, right? Just because she's not speaking up, just because she isn't attending searches, you know, because a lot of parents are told not to attend searches because...
Yeah, because you might find something and then you react not in the best way for investigative purposes. I understand that. And yes, we definitely should not be putting blame or anything of that nature because of a lack of communication, but both her and Aubrey's brother, you know, not letting law enforcement onto the property. Like, that's...
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, though, that they were letting people onto the property at the beginning because, I mean, November of 2019, it sounds like she was letting Christian and Pam and whoever bring dogs onto the property where they found this very suspicious tarp. But, like, could that indicate that she didn't have anything to hide, you know?
Yeah.
That tarp truly wasn't related to any of this. I don't know. But I think it is important to not, you know, completely jump to any conclusions here.
Yeah.
At the same time, Buell is right. I mean, typically in cases like this, it's somebody close to you.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially, okay, like, let's think about the timing. It's 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
She leaves the house. Brother follows her out of the house to, you know, ask her where she's going. Now, there's this mystery person that she was supposed to meet, but the evidence of her ever meeting this person isn't there because she was asking for rides to meet with this person. You wouldn't ask for a ride if they were coming to you. And then the phone
pings
100 yards away from the house. I mean, I don't necessarily think the mom had something to do with it, but like, did mom see brother come back into the house?
Yeah, I don't know. And you know, obviously at some point, investigators or the family or whomever got a hold of her Facebook account because they...
That information about asking for rides is out there.
But of course, you know, and I get why they haven't released exactly what she was saying, right?
Sure.
Like, why was she asking for a ride? Because I'm sure if you're asking for somebody to give you a ride at 3:30 in the morning, you're going to like... give a little bit of information,
right?
At least like, I need to get out of my house. Like, something bad is happening here.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, I want to go pick something up, or I want to go see somebody, or, you know, whatever it is. I feel like you've got to give a person a little bit of information if you're asking them to drive you somewhere in the middle of the night. But of course, we just don't know the specifics of what these messages said. As of this recording in 2023, no one has been charged in Aubrey's disappearance or potential homicide. Pam and Christian continue to fight for her. They want people to understand that Aubrey was loved. She wasn't just a drug user living a particular lifestyle, as police dismissively claimed. She was a kind-hearted, beautiful person just trying to find her way in the world and within herself. And Christian still holds out hope that they will get justice for Aubrey. Quote, I believe that we will eventually get the answers that we deserve. I believe that someone's going to come forward and the entire thing's just going to blow open. End quote. Aubrey Dameron has been missing since March 9th, 2019 from Grove, Oklahoma. Aubrey is a Native American transgender female with brown hair and brown eyes. She was approximately 5'9 to 5'10 inches tall and 130 to 170 pounds at the time of her disappearance. Aubrey's ears are pierced and she has breast implants. She has a tattoo of a triquetra on the back of her neck, a tattoo of the word shorty, and a circular design on her upper left arm at the shoulder, and tattoos on both hips. She was last seen wearing a black jacket, black shirt, black miniskirt, black stockings, and black leather boots with heels. Anyone with information on the disappearance of Aubrey Dameron is asked to call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI or go online at tips.fbi.gov. You can also call the Cherokee Nation Marshal Service at 918-207-3800. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, and Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWGPod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Additional research for this episode was provided by Nikki Elmas. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!